accession number 19860, Reel 2.
And Phipps, Reel 2. They bullied the local population by abusing them and taking and robbing them. I mean, these people were only poor peasants and could ill afford to lose the food and the belongings that these chaps took from them. And regarding planters, of course, they would rape and pillage and kill white planters. So we didn't have a strong affection for them at all. And of course, given half a chance, they'd kill us. And there's a very big incentive when the chap is either going to kill you or you kill him, to feel that you want to kill him. So I don't think we held them in great regard at all.
Now, I think that later on in your service, you joined the DLI and went to Korea. Can
Indeed.
You tell me how that happened, please?
Well, the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry went over to Germany, to Dortmund. And from there, the Durhams, who were in Berlin, were moved back to England to form a battalion ready to go to Korea. And they called for reinforcements. And I was posted from Dortmund to Brandspeth near Durham to form a battalion, bring a battalion up to strength to go to Korea. That's the summing up of the situation.
Can you tell me about going out to Korea, please?
I beg your pardon?
Can you tell me about travelling to Korea?
Again, we went out by ship to Korea on the Empire Trooper, August, September 1952.
Were conditions the same in
this? Exactly the same, precisely the same. Again, one stepped on deck if one could. And again, it was. It's an adventure. It's hardly a luxurious cruise, but nevertheless, it is a cruise. Went through the Suez Canal. I imagine we called it Aden, I remember, and did a route march in Aden. I imagine I can't remember calling it Singapore. We probably did. I think we called it Hong Kong. And then we arrived in Busan. It was raining, tipping it down. And there was an American band there playing. Well, it amused me, I always recall it. If we knew you were coming, we'd have baked a cake, was the tune. And you couldn't wish for a more dreary reception than. They were doing their best, but it was tipping it down with rain. And of course, back Busan and Korea in those days were a very backward country. I don't ever recall seeing a tarmac road, actually. I don't recall it. And we went up country by train. A very, very rough train, I recall. And formed into a tented camp. And did some exercises, military exercises. Of course, we'd been on ship, board ship for 6 weeks. So we needed to relax, rather not to relax, to get our limbs into working order again. So do some marching, and we did some schemes and fired our weapons. You probably know that it's very important to have a rifle zeroed. You need to have to fire the gun, so it's attuned to your own eye, that type of thing. And then we went into the line. I guess what they'd given us a quiet spot, I don't know. But of course, the Korean War at that time was very much like the First World War from the point of view of trenches. At this time, the activity, the movement up and down the country had ceased, and we were facing each other, along the 38th parallel, I think it was called, and the activity that took place was patrolling activity again. This time, of course, the enemy were much better armed, and activity took place always at night because we had air supremacy. So the Chinese would rarely move at in the daytime. And on the other hand, we would never move at daytime either because of the Chinese could see us. So there was no if the Chinese were going to attack us as they did occasionally, it would always be at night. And so all the patrol activity took place at night. There are two sorts of patrols. One is a reconnaissance patrol, where you normally only have one or two chaps, and their objective there is to find out what's happening. You aren't looking for a fight. If you see anyone, you try and avoid them, if you can. A fighting patrol, of course, which probably consists of something like, perhaps a dozen men. He's looking for trouble, and you're looking for a scrap there if you can find them. I went on several types of patrols. Some of them I led. I never ever came across any problems. It was extraordinarily dodgy because the front of the if you were going on patrol, in front of you there were an awful lot of barbed wire, probably a dozen or so fences of barbed wire. And interspersed in the barbed wire would be minefields. And they'd been there some time. And we were never too sure where the mines ended and where they began. We had an awful lot of, we had several casualties of people stepping on mines. And of course, since activity took place at night, again, it was rather tricky going through the minefield gaps at night and coming back. Even more tricky coming back. Lots of people did encounter problems. They did actually bump the enemy when they were, and fierce little fights went on. But I personally didn't ever get involved in any. Although we tried. We went out several times looking for trouble, or on operations. I was made a sergeant there, by the way, the first month I was made a sergeant. And as the war went on, as we were there for a year, I eventually became a platoon commander. A platoon is normally commanded by an officer, second lieutenant. Well, we were so short of officers, I actually took over a platoon towards the end, for the last 2 or 3 months, I think.
Do you remember which platoon that was?
Well, that was 5 Platoon B Company.
What kind of men were in that?
Again, all National Servicemen. Well, 90% will be National Servicemen.
Would they be from County Durham?
No, of course, they were from the 6th Light Infantry Regiments. That is the Duke Cornwall's Light Infantry. Do you know them? Duke Cornwall's Light Infantry?
Yes.
Oxford Buck's Light Infantry?
Yes.
I will tell you, you know.
Yes.
There will be recruits from all of those. Largely, it's almost impossible for a national serviceman to become much higher than a lance corporal. So most of the corporals and all officers above were regulars. But the ordinary lance corporals downwards would an awful lot of them would be ordinary national servicemen.
What were the main problems that you had being in charge of a platoon in Korea?
You see, it's always the same when you're looking after chaps. You've got to look after them like their father and their mother. They neglect themselves. They won't wash their socks and wash their feet or change their clothes, and they won't keep their weapons clean. If you don't watch them, they will use. In a situation where you're in an defensive situation like that, you must keep the ammunition dry. So you want the ammunition, for example, to remain in these boxes, and you don't want them tampered with unless they have to. You find them opening boxes of ammunition. Once they're open to damp. That's a stupid thing. That's a great deal to do with ordinary looking after troops. It's their father and mother looking after them, make sure they keep themselves as fit as they can, as clean as they can, and their weapons as clean as they can, this type of thing. Then you've got to feed them. So again, you're concerned about getting the rations up at the right time. A lot of the rations were cooked in the line. So you had to make sure somebody could cook and supervise him. And then most important of all, you had to make sure that each person had the same amount of food. So very often I personally, throughout, whether I was sergeant or a platoon sergeant or a platoon commander, would dish the food out myself to make absolutely sure that everyone had the same amount. These are the sort of things that happen. Then, of course, in those situations, you have in a situation like a static war, one of the problems is you must not only command your part of the wire in front of you, but you must command the wire from the area from your wire to the Chinese wire. That's vital. You must be in charge of that. So you must send out your patrols and be careful that you know what's going on in your sector, not just in front of you, but all the way up to their wire. If you don't do that, then you'll find the Chinese are on your wire every night and can attack you easily. One of the ways of patrolling is one way of doing it. The other way is, of course, you have a standing patrol out. This means that you have about, a section, very often, 10 men, say. Perhaps not as many as that. Perhaps a corporal and 5 men who are out there for most of the night in front of you, in front of your wire, in some sort of prepared position. And all they're there for is to listen and to warn you if any enemy approach, standing patrols. So if you're in charge of a sergeant or in charge of a platoon, you have to keep a very close rota that everyone has their fair share of doing this sort of unpleasant job. Not very pleasant, it's cold and boring. The other thing is, of course, when you're sending out your patrols, of course, don't forget, these patrols were organised by a battalion. Battalion would tell you what to do to send people out, you know, what patrols they wanted, recce patrol or a fighting patrol. Then you had to make sure that everyone had his turn on these patrols. So there's some administrative work as well. Because although you might be tempted to say, take your best people on a fighting patrol, you couldn't do that because the fellows themselves would object. It's quite amusing, really. You're jolly dangerous, but you haven't picked me for that fighting patrol. So you had to make sure they all had their fair share. I don't think anybody was really brave, but they didn't want to go back home or back to their out of the line and people tell them they hadn't been on a fighting patrol. Yes, so it's quite amusing, really. Although it was jolly dangerous, everybody wanted their share. I found that very surprising myself. I'd have thought some of them wouldn't want to have gone. But I did try originally, I remember, getting the more able chaps onto the fighting patrol, and I had to stop it. There wasn't a mutiny, but I was told off in no uncertain manner they wanted their share of action.
Did the Chinese launch any attacks?
Oh, yes.
On you whilst you were
there? Yes, they did, yes. It wasn't too difficult. It was at night, and I can't. No one recalls what strength they were at because we were firing. They were firing at us, and we were firing at their gunshot flashes. We went on for about an hour. It was a dickens of a rumpus, but they disappeared again. That's the only action I ever saw. There were lots of other actions, like a lot of shelling went on both sides. So we lose some men that way, not many. Again, I don't think we lost more than about 30 or 40 men for our year in Korea. Don't think we're many more.
What opinion did you form of the Chinese?
Oh, very good. There's nothing wrong with the way they behaved. I thought they were very professional, what I could see of it.
In what special ways?
Well, it seemed to us that they patrolled extremely well. And it, So I never came into contact with them, but people that did told me how well they'd fought. You know, there was no question of them being anything but brave and efficient.
Did you feel any hatred towards them?
No. Only the hatred that if you saw one, you either killed him or he killed you, that type of thing. But I don't feel any hatred towards him.
Would you be able to see them?
I didn't see any. We saw the dead ones, of course. Occasionally there was a dead one brought in. But I never saw any, because if you did see them, they would be shadowy figures at night. There's no daylight action at all. Not in my experience, anyway.
And what conditions were corpses of the enemy brought in?
They shot, you mean. There was a bullet through them somewhere or other.
Brought in by patrols, you mean?
Yes, that's right. These sort of intelligence always wanted body if they can get one, and they get the information from their uniform and so on. But I didn't shoot any. I didn't bring any in, but I did see the bodies.
What type of information could they get from the body?
Well, they would get, for example, what unit was there. They would also get the condition of the man himself and his physical appearance, and you know, whether he was well fed or poorly fed, whether he was well clothed or poorly clothed, and also what papers he had on him. Could be very useful to intelligence to know what battalion or division was facing us.
Did you personally know much about which enemy were facing you?
No idea. One of the things they would do, of course, is they were very good at sneaking up onto our wire if they could, and putting propaganda information to us, telling us we were stooges of the Americans, and we should be on their side and against capitalism, and the Americans were using us as stooges for their capitalist system, and these chaps were the fellows who were looking after the ordinary soldier. That type of thing. I've probably got some somewhere if you'd like to see them.
Did this propaganda have any effect?
No. Everyone laughed at them. You didn't believe them. One of the things the Americans, of course, were very much better equipped than we were in every way. I had no complaints about our uniforms. We were extraordinarily well looked after from the point of view of winter clothing and winter boots, because it's extraordinarily cold out there, of course, in the winter. One of our problems was, it seems to me, that the weapons we were using were very old. I mean, I don't mean old so much as they've been made a long time, but the design was old. We had Stens, which were, in my opinion, Sten is an automatic submachine gun, held in the hand, and it was extremely dangerous to use from the point of view of the locking device was very, very unsafe. The gun itself was poorly made and very inaccurate. The rifles, were nothing wrong with the rifle, but of course it was the same rifle virtually designed that we used in the Boer War. Round rifle, very slow and cumbersome. The Americans had much better equipment. The Bren itself, the Bren's very nice from the point of view of machine gun, except that it's magazine fed. The magazine would hold about 20 rounds, and I think we had about a dozen magazines for each gun. But the gun itself would shoot at a theoretical rate of 600 rounds a minute. So you can imagine it didn't take long to get rid of the magazines. And once those magazines were gone, it took ages to fill the magazines again. Now, a situation like we were facing, where the Chinese were coming at us in hordes, you needed something that would fire a bit quicker. Now, the Americans had a much better system. They had a Browning, which was a belt-fed gun, air-cooled. So what happened, of course, is the Americans were awfully short of booze, and for some reason, the British Army always managed to have plenty of booze. So you could swap for a bottle of scotch. You could get a Browning and as much ammunition as you could carry away. So we all had Brownings, which were very useful, particularly on that night attack that we had. Because the Brens would have been half the platoon would have been filling magazines to get the keep the machine guns going. So Browning was a very, very useful weapon. Of course, the Americans were always had plenty of this sort of stuff. We were short of it, seemed to me. Although the Americans were very, 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 very keen on keeping their people short of alcohol. Well, we could always, I, as a sergeant, I had a bottle of scotch a month allocated to me.
Did the alcohol available to English troops have any deleterious effect?
No. Sometimes, if you were lucky, they would bring beer up in the line. That was for the ordinary chaps. It was Tiger beer, if I recall, bottles, which froze in the winter. That wasn't much good, but in ordinary times, they were very, very glad to have a bottle of beer.
Didn't the whiskey freeze?
Well, whiskey wasn't available to the ordinary soldier. What was available to them was rum. I had throughout the whole of the campaign, I at least always had a full bottle of water bottle of rum, which held 2 pints. So I could issue rum to my discretion. If anybody was particularly cold, I'd give them a shot of rum.
How did you decide when to dispense it?
I decided if I felt they needed it. If they'd been on patrol all night, and they came in of course, shaking and cold, and it would bring a bit of colour back to them. You'd give them very much, you know, just a tot.
What did you think of the other Allied troops like the Americans?
Americans, nothing wrong with the Americans. They've got a different system of operating, seemed to me, but we've got on all well with them. Because they would take over from them on the line, and they'd take over from us. But I don't... whenever we took over from the Americans, it seemed to us the Chinese were on our wire all night. And we had to send out patrols to push them back. This is where we picked up these propaganda leaflets. They were putting propaganda leaflets on our wire because we'd just taken over from the Americans. Now, when we were in command, there was no way that these chaps got anywhere near our wire, as far as I know. Well, perhaps that's my feeling. That's the feeling I got. We were on a hill feature, 359, which I think was, in our particular sector, dominated the front. In other words, whoever was on 359, a hill feature, was in a very strong position. It would mean if they were on there for long, we'd have to retreat because they'd go oversee our operations. So if you lost 359, you'd have to get it back. I think it was 359. Anyway, I remember the Americans losing it on one occasion. We were out of the line at the time. But you see, this is what I say, people criticise the Americans, but they jolly well got it back. So that we went back into the line, they'd taken it back again. So although their methods were different to ours, they seemed to achieve the same results in the long run.
Any other allies that you came into contact with?
We had New Zealand gunners behind us. And they were, as far as I know, they were good enough gunners. They were 25-pounders. The artillery was very useful. If you were being attacked, they would give you a close support. I remember the New Zealanders were very keen on our cap badges, so you had to be careful. They'd pinch the cap badge if they could, for some reason. They were of no great value, of course, but a nuisance if you lost your cap badge. Difficult to get another one out there. We were with an Australian brigade, so we were one of the few Australian brigades. Sorry, we were one of the few Commonwealth brigades there. I think we're the only Commonwealth brigade. If you recall, there was only one division there, our division, the Commonwealth division. The rest of the divisions were American. And of the Commonwealth division, our brigade was the only one intermingled with another Commonwealth country, which was Australia. So we were together with the Australians, who we got on very well with the Australians. They were, of course, all regulars. And they looked a fairly formidable crowd as well. However, we took over from them and they took over from us, and we got on extremely well with them.
In what way did they look formidable?
They were big and strong. Don't forget, our chaps were wartime babies or that type of thing. You look at our 18-year-olds compared with these fellows, it seemed ridiculous that we were the same in the same war. However, when we took over from the Australians, we took over their position, and we were still there when they came back, so we must have done all right.
Any relationship which the DLI had with local Koreans?
We had Korean troops with us. There were Korean porters, I think. They were helpful because we all, these situations were on a hill. Most of the positions were on hill, on a range of hills. We would be on one range of hills and the Chinese would be on the other. So you're getting supplies up the hill. You could get a truck to the bottom of the hill, say, but getting up the hill needed porterage. And these fellows were our porters, very hard-working fellows. I imagine they were well. They were certainly well fed because they were bringing up the Russians, so they wouldn't be short of food. They were probably quite happy to do it. But we did have Australian. I think we had a few sprinkling of Korean troops as well. The odd two or three who were there to not so much to bolster us, but to pick up our method of fighting, I think, rather than anything else.
What were they like?
They were all right because they couldn't speak English. It was very difficult to get on with them, but they were a cheerful, happy-go-lucky lot. I remember if you have egg and bacon porridge, say, for breakfast, they'd put everything in one and eat it. It was all the same to them. I remember them mixing porridge with egg and bacon in the same mess can. However, they got on all right. They were a happy enough bunch.
Any incidents that happened to you when you were in Korea?
A funny thing that... this is an amusing story, actually. We were on, I think it was 359, and adjoining us across a saddle was another situation, not so far away, which the intelligence asked me if I would send a recce patrol out to see if there was anyone on this hill. They wanted to know whether it was occupied by the Chinese or not. And they said, send a corporal and one man. I was platoon commander by this time. So I got all the corporals together and asked them if they who would volunteer to go and would they pick a man to go with them. As typical of situations like that, they all volunteered. Typical of them. So I selected one, Shannon. Shannon, who was actually he was a senior corporal and was acting as my platoon sergeant. But he was a good man and I thought he'd be the right man for the job. And I knew who he'd pick. He picked Brown 8-3 because they were good friends. They shouldn't have been. Corporal and a private aren't supposed to be friends, but they were. So in a situation like that, if you're doing a recce of that nature, the best time to go is probably at dusk, where you can see what you're doing and they can't see you, with a bit of luck. And something else that you do in a situation like that is that you put all of the machine guns you have trained on the top of this hill in daylight. You train them in daylight and sandbag them down so they won't move when you fire them. So if you want to give the chap covering fire at night, you just pull the trigger. They're all aimed at the top of the hill. Obviously, if it's dark, you can't see where you're aiming. So I got all the machine guns, went around them all personally, told the guys what I wanted, and sighted them myself. I also gave Sharon a torch and said, well, you get up there. If you're in trouble, flash the torch, and we'll give you covering fire. So all right, off they went at dusk. And we waited. And all of a sudden, there was a boomp as a grenade went off. We could see the grenade going off. And then we saw the light flashing, Shannon's light going. So all the machine guns went off. And then Shannon came down on his own. I said, oh, where's Brown? Where's Brown? I don't know, because don't forget he was hyped up. He was shaking a lot. Because he apparently, when they got...